Welcome to another episode of The Suspendables with funny man Jungle Jim Jerome and retired NHL star Russ Cortinel.
Here's Cortinel. He scores! Cortinel speeding in!
Each week they unleash their raw, stripped-down, unfiltered opinions on all things hockey and maybe other stuff too. Who knows? Inside stories, absolutely. Outrage, guaranteed. Offside, for sure. And always plenty of laughs. Strap in. The Suspendables is coming at you right now.
Another week in the books. Hi again, everybody. It's Jungle Jim Jerome. Right in your face with another episode of The Suspendables with the one and only Russ Cortinel. There it is, Rusty. Beautiful. Beautiful, my man. Yeah, that's why I love you. The snapping of a white claw to start the show off. Lots to talk about, Rusty, on the show this week. And by the way, huge outpouring of response to Wendell Clark, who we had on last week.
Yeah, he is. He's awesome.
I thought he was going to be a little bit of a sort of low reactor guy. Maybe tough to pull stuff out of, but not at all, right? Because I don't hear him too much, you know. And of course, he's retired, but he was great.
Yeah, he does a ton of work in Toronto and Ontario for the Leafs and for Andrew Jackson and Jackson right. Events. The guy's busy,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, good.
Busy. So he's talking to people all the time.
Does he have family, Russ?
Yeah, he's got three kids. One. Two girls and one boy, same as me. And his son plays pro. He's in the minors for Washington right. Capitals. I think he was second round pick.
Right. He had mentioned that. Yeah, I forgot.
Yeah.
So, Rusty, I guess we got to talk. This is Tuesday. We decided we usually record Mondays and the show drops on Wednesdays. And then we thought, no, you've got one of the biggest games in all of hockey history. Happening, a game 7 between the Leafs and the Habs. Of course, you played for both teams, and we said, that's a good idea. Let's watch that game. The Leafs were up 3-1 in a best of 7, and clicky, lose game 5, lose game 6. This was not supposed to happen, Russ, at all. Talk about it, Russ, about the series and what your thoughts are.
I did say that Carey Price could win on his own. He's that good. But I did not. After, I think it was after game 3 or 4, I'm like, it's over. They're just, they don't have the team to do it. And then sure enough, boom, Carey Price show comes in and they're done. And I watched the first two periods last night and then I just stopped because I went to a Memorial Day barbecue and I went over to my friend's house and he said, do you want to put the game on? I go, no, it's over. He said, they're not going to win. And you could just see it. It was just, they were tentative and Carey Price is just, he's that right. good. I mean, he really is. You get a 1-goal lead. It's like a 5-goal
right,
lead.
Right.
And they really shut down, Marner and, Matthews and, anyways, they were the better team at the last couple games.
Were you pulling for anyone, Russ?
I was pulling for the Leafs.
Yeah, how come?
So normally in that situation, I have my Montreal Canadiens sweater on it with my Leafs jersey over top because I play for both
right.
teams.
Right.
No, it's true. I pull for all my old teams when they're in the playoffs, but the Leafs were so good at this year, and they're young, they're exciting, and they haven't won in such a long time. And so I really wanted them to win. And they're a good team, and a much better team than Montreal until the last few games. But I just thought the Leafs had a chance to go all the way and win it.
You're not the first to say that for this year, and you wouldn't be the first to say it for every single year when the Leafs make the playoffs that they're supposed to do it. Let me read you a little something here because I want to ask you about you know, the stress of playing in Toronto and Montreal. And there was a story that broke this week and we're going to talk about, and I'll fill you in, with the great female tennis player, Naomi Osaka, number two in the world, who's over at the French Open and decided at the start of it, she's not going to give any press conferences. So I'll tell you more about that. So hockey fans roast the Leafs after stunning series loss to the Canadiens. The Toronto Maple Leafs' cursed fan base was dealt yet another sharp, excruciating blow with a heartbreaking Game 7. I don't know why I'm laughing. This is terrible.
Because you're an Oiler fan, that's why.
I can hardly...
Misery loves company.
Heartbreaking loss, Game 7 on Monday night, and the internet was predictably out in full force, ready to twist that knife as slowly and painfully as possible. And the Leafs fans were more than ready to take it, too. Toronto is currently trudging through one of the worst runs in hockey, Russ. And in fact, in all of pro sports. Failing to win even a single playoff series since 2004. Currently rocking the NHL's longest championship drought at 54 years. And mired in a 9-game losing streak in potential series-clinching games. Toronto's been ousted in the opening round in each of the last 5 postseasons, with 4 of those series losses coming in heartbreaking fashion. 2 straight Game 7 loss to Boston, Game 5 to Columbus in the bubble, on and on and on. There's a bunch of stuff that's written here. So, like, first of all, Russ, when you watch some of that series, you see it, you just made note that they were done when you watched the game. How do you, when you talked about them being tentative, Russ, explain that to me and the good listener.
Well, they both teams in the first period were kind of a ping pong match. Everybody was afraid to make a mistake. It looked like everyone was worried about making a mistake, and mistakes had cost the Leafs a couple overtime games. So you could see they were coming back and forth and back and forth, and nobody's really taken any chances. And you know, rightfully so. It's Game 7. Everybody's nervous, but you've got to step on the gas pedal at some point. And then Gallagher gets that first goal, and you could just see the Montreal Canadiens, the confidence went through the roof, and they picked up their game and just smothered Austin and Marner. Right. I mean, they just looked nervous. And then when they were behind, they weren't playing well enough to mm-hmm. win, it looked like. And Carey Price was just in his net, stopping everything, and just looked so confident in there. So big. He just looked huge in the net. Massive. I'm sure the players were thinking the same thing.
You know, I think I've quoted you one time on the show talking about playoffs, and I think you said if you get up 3-1 in a best of 7, your goalie's done his job, you know. Or should have. And obviously it didn't end up that way. What happens, Russ, when it's starting to slip away, right? They you know, the most important game is the next one, always in the series. Mm-hmm. And they lose Game 5 to go down 3-2.
Not a big deal to lose.
Game not a five. Real big deal. No, not a real no. big deal. No. But what are the coaches doing, Russ? What happens in the room? Walk us backwards. Think last night, for example, when between the first and second period in a huge game. Take us inside the locker room there, Russ. Who's taking charge? Is the coaches addressing them? Players, or how's it work?
The leadership group and whoever's there's always somebody who's the loudest in the locker room, whether it's the captain or assistants or another mm-hmm. player. There's always that person that's trying to lead the way, and then the coaches are, you know, they're doing their job. They're working with players, and they're showing them video, and they're talking about this and talking about that and what they need to do. And I mean, they've got everything analyzed to death, and just trying to encourage the players to go and you know, get one by them. Like they're always like, get, you know, let's get one and we'll get two, you know, just get that first one and build on that, work, focus on getting a goal. Mm-hmm. And, I don't know. It's just always, it's just positive reinforcement. We're a good team. We can do this and, nobody's shitting on right. anybody. It's just like everyone's trying to build one another up to get going, get a goal, get another goal and, hopefully win the game. So it's just positive reinforcement and encouragement. Right. I think.
How much strategy changes, Russ? For example, if you're going bad, it is slipping away and, you know, the coach sees exactly what you do, Russ. Tentative, guys are scared. They're too nervous. There's so much going on. Would they change, Russ, their sort of game plan? Like maybe they're doing a chip and chase at one point and then they're going, okay, forget that. We're going to do a 2-1-2. We're going to do some sort of trap or something. Does that happen, Russ, during a game?
Well, before you know, I think coaches will change lines, right? The mm-hmm. lineup. They may bring in one or two players that haven't been playing and change the lines. But you know, Toronto lost their captain, a huge loss, and then they had Muzzin, the defenseman, not play yesterday. So those are two major players in their team, and they had to bring in younger players to insert into their position. So yeah, you've got to be willing to change, whether it's injuries or you're behind the eight ball. And Montreal was putting in guys in and out, and you know, they were changing all the time, trying to figure stuff out. And then they started rolling with the and got, you know, first overtime, and then they won the second. When you win two back-to-back overtime games, I mean, that's just massive confidence right. builder. Confidence builder for any team. And they were saying last night on TV, when Montreal won the cup in 93, they won 10 overtime games out of 16.
No way.
And they were making 10 out of 16 games were won in overtime. So then, and yeah, back then you had Patrick Waugh in that. And I remember we were playing Hartford and we went to a game 7, double overtime. And, Patrick stood on his head. He stopped a breakaway in the second overtime, and then we won. And it was Patrick who carried us there. And so, you know, the Carey Price did the same thing.
Who's going to get the most hammered after the series, Russ? The Habs or the Leafs?
Oh, boy. A good question. Misery and celebration. Which one's going to win?
Just a reminder, if you'd like to connect online with Russ or Jimmy or engage with them on social media, find out how at thesuspendables.com.
This story I talked about earlier, Naomi Osaka. So what happens, folks, if you didn't hear, she's one of the greatest players in the world right now. She's number 2, I think, ranked. And, cool girl. People love her. She was the media loved her as far as we could see. And she's funny. She's great with the press. She's refreshing. She's really good. And then this thing breaks. The French Open started this week. She wins her first round. And then we find out that she has said, I'm not going to do any press conferences at all because she doesn't show up after her first round. And the reason is because she doesn't like what they're saying, talking to her about her. She finds it stressful. Then what happens is the French Open committee says, well, she gets fined the $15K because there's an obligation for her to do it. And if she keeps it up, we're going to give her more money. And then they just throw this out there thinking it'll never happen. And if she continues to do it, then she could get, you know, there could be an expulsion from her. And no one ever thinks that. And this chick, who'd made a comment saying it's I suffer from anxiety and mental illness and stress. So what happens the next day? She wakes up and goes, I'm pulling out of the tournament. Boom, Rusty. Kaboom.
Unreal.
And yeah, I said, this is one of the biggest stories I've ever heard of in sports. You know, I mean, That's, I don't know. That'd be like you, Russ, stepping away from a Stanley Cup final, a major, you know?
It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, and I my wife's a huge tennis fan. So she asked if I'd read about it. And I said, yeah, I'd read a little bit about it. And she explained to me that there was some history when she won and they booed or something and she started crying. She mm-hmm. was really upset and she suffers from anxiety and she didn't want it to be about her. She wanted to be about tennis. So she was just refusing to do these interviews because of her anxiety, mental health issues and stuff, which was very admirable of her to open up and tell everybody about her mm-hmm. issues that she has. And then for her to just slam them and go, you know what? You're going to do that to me. I'm out. I quit. And now everyone, I think most people are going, they now, if there was doubters out there, they believe her, like she really is telling the truth. She's not being a spoiled princess going, I just don't want to do the interviews.
Right.
And so there's so many people behind her now applauding what she did, supporting her, and the tennis committee are, they're just getting slammed right well, now. No pun intended.
If you're running the French Open going, who saw this coming?
Yeah.
That wasn't part of the deal.
Right. Because we always tend to say, oh, that, you know, a celebrity, the tennis, you know, whatever, the athlete's being spoiled and they won't talk. And, you know, they always, we tend to lean towards the media and say, you know, the athlete really does need to make time for the interviews, which I 100% believe in, that when you're an athlete, you have to be prepared to talk to the reporters. But she was giving a legitimate reason why she didn't want to. And then adios amigos,
right,
and made everybody there look like shit.
Right. Right. She does say another cool thing too, that she didn't want to be a distraction.
Right. 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 She didn't. And I thought I said that earlier, like she just didn't want, she wanted it to be about the tournament and not about the past history and them, you know, bringing up whatever happened before and all that stuff. So
right.
I think it's great that she, you know, and hopefully she's getting some help for her mental health problems that she's having, because we all know, you know, there's lots of people suffering. And so this has actually probably done a really good thing for mental health and people who are suffering.
Right. To the fan, Russ, right. They're kind of ignorant to anything that, you know, that would happen in a player's life away from the sport. You know, that mm-hmm. when you do hear that, where some guy gets upset and the media says, this is bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, Tortorella, right, is one of the greatest guys ever. Right. And they walk away, and all the fans do is go, suck it up, dude. You're making millions a year.
Yeah.
Don't cry to me. If you're suffering from stress, well, then get the fuck out of hockey. Get out of tennis, you know?
Yeah, if you can't take it.
Right?
Get out. Yeah.
And, you know, there's a parallel here, Russ, because you played in two of the biggest cities in the world. What'll be interesting, Russ, to see what happens from this Osaka thing? Is it going to bring other players forward and go, you will not believe the stress that it is, Russ, to be a pro athlete and particularly a high performer. You played in Toronto, Russ. Did you ever find yourself anxious or stressful walking around that city, being fully recognized, living under that bubble of, you know, the 54-year drought with the Leafs? Did it ever cause you any problems, Russ?
Not in Toronto, because I was young and just started my career, and I was just trying to make it and play and become part of the NHL. And it took me 2 or 3 years before I felt that. So it really didn't affect me. There was pressure there. And we were, the unfortunate part, I feel, looking back now, is that we were taught by the management not to trust and like the media. And the media is tough, but you need to be there for them to answer questions. And so I always had this thing about the media and you know, they were not to be trusted, and sure, you gotta keep your guard up. But, I think you still have a responsibility to the media and, to be accessible. And where I really had my first problem was in Montreal, my fourth year when I got injured. I just signed the big contract at the time. And I was the 20th highest paid player in the league for a second. And I tore my rotator cuff in warm up. And then I was out for 41 games and the media just turned on me. And then I came back and then I got my hand, I got slashed in my hand. I missed another 13 games. And so it was just downhill. And then I started asking for a trade. And I just had got engaged with Paris and I wanted, and she was an actress and working. And so I thought, you know, I want to play in LA so she can work and I can play and get out of that. But I mean, I had fans yelling at me on the street because I was carrying groceries. So when you have a torn rotator cuff, you can hold anything like a bag or
right.
anything really heavy. It's when you lift your arm up over your head that it really hurts. I can
see what's happening here.
So I'm walking home down St. Catherine Street with two bags of groceries. Guys drove by me yelling, "You're faking it," because I could carry the groceries.
Oh, no.
You know, the media was on me saying, questioning whether I was really hurt and I'd signed this big deal. And like, you know, and that just was the beginning of the end of my year in Montreal, my career in Montreal. I just, I wanted out of there and it gave me an excuse to ask for a trade. And I've said this before, I regret it. I'm the, you know, Serge Savard, to this day, I regret ever calling him and, I talked to Serge about it, but what I regret is going to the media and ask and telling them I wanted to get traded. Before that, it was just between Serge and I, and he kept saying, "I'm not trading you for nothing."
Right.
And he was trying to talk me out of it. And then I went to the media and that's what I regret. And
right.
So, but you anyways, that I did have a bad experience with the media.
Right.
It was awful.
But right.
It was awful. And thank God I could only speak English because I didn't get to hear or read all the other stuff they were saying in the other papers because in the French papers or radio stations or TV, but you know, sure enough, the French guys told me enough that I knew it was bad.
So the answer is yes, it is stressful.
Yeah. Yeah. It can be in a city like Toronto, Montreal, but you know, some cities, they don't recognize the players. I played golf on Saturday with Drew Doughty, one of the biggest stars in the game today. And we had a great time at Sherwood. And no, not one person asked for his autograph. Nobody said anything to him other than the starter. He's a young kid. He's a big fan. But other than that, it was not a big deal. Where if he was in Montreal or Toronto, there would have been freaking crowds of people around watching him play.
Well, true. And it's not by coincidence, Russ, that a bunch of those, you know, celebrity guys, athletes, Hollywood stars live up around Sherwood because of the privacy. And same thing with Gosser, right? Where you're developing that. That's kind of out of the way, right? Tucked away and people have their
Kardashians
privacy.
Kardashians bought up there last summer. Mark Wahlberg bought there.
Right.
There's a few other celebrities, but a lot of athletes are up there now.
Do you see a time, Rusty, with... you know, where this girl, Naomi, comes and says, you know, I'm stressed. I'm stressed from doing this. There is not just an obligation, but it's mandated. You must do it. You must. Yeah. And I think it's the same in the NHL that you must meet the press.
Yeah.
After.
If requested, I don't think you can turn it down.
Right.
Unless there's got to be something like if a play, I'm just thinking out. If a player was, say, injured and was getting attended to and he can't come out because of something, you know, medical reason, but you can't just say, no, I refuse to talk to the media. There's got to be some rules in place.
Right. Or will you be able to, Russ, going forward, now that this girl said, look, this is affecting my mental health and I need a pass here.
My understanding was it was just this tournament, though. It wasn't. So I don't know about that.
So does she have to toughen up, Russ?
Well, I think she's going to have to get over that, but I think she's going to have to get into some therapy and talk to somebody and get over it.
Right.
Because she can go out and play in front of thousands of people live and millions of people watching on TV. Mm-hmm. So, you know, she doesn't have stage fright. she can do that because she's doing it. So right. talking to a microphone with a person standing behind it asking the question, she'll manage. I think it was just because of that tournament. It wasn't every tournament she's not going to talk to the media, but I could be wrong. Mm-hmm. She'll get over it. Because if she had stage fright, she wouldn't be able to play tennis.
Right.
In front of all those people.
Right.
She didn't want to talk to the media because she's got anxiety over the what happened in the past, my right. understanding.
Right. It'll be curious to see what happens. And you and a bunch of other players have said, including our dear friend, the great one, you know, when he was asked about this, about what's your obligation, Wayne, to the press? What's your obligation to the fans? It must be crazy. You know, I've been with him. You've been with him. He's just never alone. He's never alone. The most I'm ever alone with that guy will last about 15 minutes. Okay. Yeah. Before 25 people show up. Okay. And he said, well, it is, but I understand that's my role. I understand that's what God tapped me on the shoulder to be. And someone asked him, when do you relax? You know, when can you relax? When are you the most relaxed? And he said, as soon as I step on the ice.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, sitting at home, not watching Netflix or any of that.
Yeah.
And that's not an uncommon answer, right, Russ, with guys who are in the limelight.
I loved it. Like, I love being out there, and I love the pressure, and I don't know, I just felt like, you know, somebody said we're performers, and that's what I felt like. It was. I said to people in Montreal, when I lived downtown and I would walk to the rink before every game, and it just, the buildup in that city for the game all day long was so awesome and exciting. People were just, you could feel the city just talking about the game and ready. People wearing their jerseys back then. It wasn't as prominent as people wearing jerseys today, but, you'd go into the rink and you just start your routine, and most players have the exact same routine every single day of a game.
Right.
And so you build on that, you know, from what getting up in the morning to going to having a light skate. Then you have pregame meal at 1 o'clock, usually eat the exact same thing. Then you have a nap, you get up, maybe a snack, and you're on your way to where an away rink or home. It's the same thing. And it's phenomenal.
Got the butterflies going?
The only time I was when we were in the finals against Montreal, and I couldn't sleep the night before a couple of the games. But other than that, I was good, and I loved it.
What would Montreal be like today, Russ, after that victory?
My God.
Like walking,
planning the parade.
Yeah. Well, now they got, you know, they could do it, right?
Well, they're going to have a hell of a time against Winnipeg. You know, what did Wendell Clark say last week? He said the best six forwards in the NHL are Winnipeg, and they have the best goalie. So I think, you know, Montreal is going to have Carey Price be as good as he was, and maybe even better to beat Winnipeg, because they look really good,
yeah,
and really strong.
Although the same thing could have been said, maybe not six, but you go, Montreal's going to have a hard time. You know, they got 3-4 of the best guys in the league, and then
you were talking about the North Division, you know, the Canadian Division. This is great for Canada, because there's two teams still left, and then there's going to be there'll be one. And so this year, you know, there's a better chance of, you know, we have a better chance of a Canadian team winning than we probably have had in a long time. So there's going to be a lot of people in Canada watching, and now it'll take a little bit, and then people will start cheering for those teams. But Leaf fans are in mourning right now, for sure.
Right. You were giving me a hard time in mourning. Yeah. Are they cursed, Rusty? Is there such a thing as the curse? The Bambino curse? The Sports Illustrated curse?
I don't think they played good. And they lost two of their best players. And, you know, they were playing good. They just, their timing was off.
Right.
And they hit a great goalie, and who is a great goalie, and one of the best in the world, maybe one of the best ever. So, it's not time to start talking about rebuilding and all this crap.
Right, right.
They're a really good team. And you know, Quebec Nordiques with Joe Sakic and Forsberg and Mats and, oh my God, they had all this talent, Foot, and it took them a while. They kept losing. And then they moved to Colorado. They got Patrick Waugh, and then they won. And it took them a while, but they were in the same boat with these young superstars. It just, Stevie Y took a long time to win a Stanley Cup, you know, years and years and years of hard work and,
right.
and built, and the team kept getting better. And, you know, they took two steps forward and one step back and then three steps and two, you know, it took a while. So I just think Leaf fans, you got a great team, great future, and it sucks. But the shit happens.
Right. It's tough to win, man. It's tough to win. It's freaking
tough to win. You know, you got, look at Edmonton. How do the Edmonton Oilers feel? They got two of the best players in the world currently.
Yes.
And they lost. So
not only lost, they lost. You were zinging me, okay, you little prick. Yeah. You were zinging
me. Well, that's why you've been giggling.
Jimmy, are you on the golf course with all the Oilers? Yeah. You have to hang out. And then I said, listen, Rusty, I've touched that Stanley Cup more than you have, so give me a break.
So the other day, I play golf with Mike Commodore.
Yes.
Who is just hilarious.
Oh, is he funny?
And and if you get a chance, follow him on social media because he's got this hashtag in one, and we got into one on Saturday. So we had Teddy Purcell from Newfoundland, who lives in L.A., and then Drew Doughty and Teddy live in the same neighborhood, and there's a lot of other kings there. And then Mike Commodore lives in Scottsdale, and they're on a golf trip.
Yeah.
So Mike reaches out to me and says, hey, can we play Sherwood? You do mine? And I go, are you kidding me? I'd love to. So I set up a Saturday golf game. And he goes, he texts me and goes, are we going to have a few drinks? And I quickly sent back, no. And he goes, what? I go, no, we're going to have a lot more than a few. So we load up with White Claws and they like vodka soda. So we played. It was Drew and I. We beat them. And it was just a blast. And being around hockey players again, for me, it was just, I said to them, I just miss this so much. And that's what I love about Gosser, because I'm around all these hockey guys all the time. And anyways, we had a great day, and then we came back to my house, and we're sitting around my bar, and
no way.
I introduced him to the Vesper Martini, the original James Bond Martini.
Sure.
And made some food, and they had an Uber driver and everything, so it was set. Everything's great, and Drew Doughty looks up at top of my bar, and he goes, what trophies are those? And I'm going through them, you know, two or plus minus Selke.
Yeah.
Trophies. One's Team Canada when we won the 91 Canada Cup, and one's the conference when we went to the finals, and then Canada, and then Molson Cup,
right?
Player of the year, or something like that. And then I look at him and I go, but no Stanley Cups.
Yeah.
Like he's got, you know, his house. There's probably a mini Stanley.
Yeah, right.
Before he could say anything, I said, no Stanley Cups.
Yeah. Of course, LA anyway. Chicago's traded back and forth there. Remember? Of course you would. The Stanley Cups, right?
Yeah. We had such a great time, and it was so much fun. And man, can those guys hit it a long ways. Holy smokes.
Are they good golfers?
Oh, yeah. They were ripping it. They were, I think one was a five handicap. And then, so Commodore was a five. And then Drew and Teddy were seven and eight. And I was 15. I'm a 15.
You're a good partner, though. 15's a good partner to have.
Yeah, that's what Drew said. He might be bringing me back to Ontario for the member guests.
There you go. Yeah. Wouldn't be like you to sneak in there. That'd be good.
But great guys, I have to say, great guys. I knew Commie, but I'd never met the other two.
As much as we hate doing analysis, I got to ask you, because we were talking earlier how we zipped back and forth. We always do. I'm going to record some of the texts that we zing each other. Oh, great. Oilers go down 0-4, and you had said you can't win games with only one guy.
Yeah. One or two guys, you can't. You need more than one or two players, and you need a great goalie, as we witnessed with Montreal.
Right. Right.
So
we'll have to see what happens there.
Yeah. Well, Toronto, they just,
come on,
they
Connor, lost. Fuck, man. Win a fucking round. Yeah, I know you just said that you can't with one guy, but
yeah. Yeah. Well,
who saw that coming, Russ? They shut them down for two games. They went pointless for the first two games.
Yeah, and you could see Weber was all over the Marner and Austin Matthews, and their D did a great job. They only played 4D the last couple of games.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, that's unheard of. Unheard of that you go with 4D. Some teams might go with 5, but not 4. I mean, they barely played the other two guys. So that's a lot of ice time. Yeah. Yeah. I know to text you, not leave you voicemails, because way back when you had your radio show, when you asked me to come on the air, and it was early, so I got up at like 5 o'clock in the morning when I used to sleep in, and you never called me, and I went and I left you a voicemail, and you freaking played that on the air for freaking a month.
Oh, we did. Well, Stevie, you remember that, because you called me an asshole.
I called you an asshole. And I said, do you even have a radio show, you asshole?
We did. We played.
I go, fuck, I've been up since 5. I haven't been up since 5 since I was a little kid. And oh, my God, the birds are chirping.
We can find that somewhere.
Oh, yeah. My God, that was funny. What I called you something. More than just an asshole.
Yeah, probably. Anyways. A bunch of words.
But you freaking played it on the air in Ottawa for a month.
We did. Yeah, we played a lot. I'll tell you what the biggest disappointment of the season so far, Rusty, the playoff season. There was an event that happened, an occasion, okay? A breaking news story that means I no longer get to go to the Oilers games and sit in the box, the owner's box. Wayne pulls out, Rusty. Yep. Wayne pulls out. I gather, I haven't talked to him about it, but I gather a big multi-million-dollar deal with TNT. We had heard that, Rusty. We weren't allowed to say anything, that he was going to, you know, give up the Oiler thing. And did you talk to him, Russ, about it?
He told me last summer that he was thinking about packing it in.
Uh-huh.
And I thought it was because of, you know, moving to Florida, and we know he doesn't like to fly. And then this came out of nowhere for me. He hadn't talked to me about it. And I quickly texted him and congratulated him. He goes, and ? And I go, with the TNT gig. And he goes, well, thank you, but I haven't decided yet, but I'm thinking about it. Never brought up the Edmonton thing, but I kind of assumed that if he took that, then okay, he's going to retire from Edmonton. And sure enough, he took that job, but announced his resignation after they quit,
right?
Or after they got knocked out. But he, you know, it's going to be interesting. We all love listening to Wayne and hearing hearing him tell stories. And I hope that it comes across on TV what you and I know,
right,
and what our listeners, I guess, have heard from Wayne from the two shows he's done. I hope it comes across on TV, and I just hope he's phenomenal, because
it's not an easy gig being an analyst. It is not an easy gig, you know.
When we started this, I told Bill when he talked to me about doing this show. I said, I can't hold a show on my own, but athletes are good at interviews. So if you can get Jimmy, my friend, to do this, I think I'll try it. And so Wayne, as long as somebody's asking the questions, I think Wayne will be fine. I think I really do. If somebody's teeing him up and letting him go. And he has such great knowledge of the game, as we've all heard, that, I'm sure he's going to be fine. I think so many people are going to enjoy listening to him, and nothing against hockey analysts that we've had in the past, but I've always wondered, you know, when was the TV station, when were they going to step up and pay the big guys,
right,
the Hall of Famers, to come on the air and like they do in basketball, like they do in football,
right,
like they've done in baseball. And this could, if Wayne is as good as we think he's going to be, I think it's going to lead to more, bigger names coming on the air, because they're going to have to pay these guys big money.
Yeah. Well, look at Tony Romo.
To do it.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, he makes me want to watch football.
Totally, Rusty.
Troy Aikman has made me want to watch football.
Yeah.
I love listening to those guys.
Yeah.
And they're so insightful and they're great players. That's, as a fan, that's what I want to hear. I want to hear great. I want to hear greatness tell me what they're thinking.
Yeah. I think the toughest part of the gig for Wayne, will be, because he is the nicest guy in the world and is the first guy to give everyone a second chance. Okay. Like he very, very seldom says anything negative about anyone. And he genuinely believes that. Yeah. I know it personally for me. He gave me a second chance a long time ago. I think it'll be difficult when there's glaring mistakes for how he's going to handle that, because, like if it was Brett Hull, right? He'd go brutal right there. Brutal. Yeah. They got to sit him, bench him and all that stuff. You're not going to get that from Wayne, you know?
But who's to say they're not going to build a bigger panel? I don't think it's just going to be Wayne Gretzky.
Right.
I think it's going to be three or four guys, and they'll have somebody on there that probably is going to be the hard ass.
Right.
Because that's not Wayne's style, and it wouldn't, he's not going to be comfortable doing that. So I think they'll have somebody on there. Maybe it will be Brett Hull.
Yeah. And even if the guy is a hard ass, Russ, he's going to have a hard time reacting to that too. He doesn't like talking shit about people, you know? I mean that in a very positive way.
Right. I think it'll work if they have the right person, especially if it was Holly. I think that would be freaking hilarious. My God.
Or Kelly Chase or someone, you know?
But, or Kelly.
Well, Chase, he's got a gig. He's got tons of experience. For some reason, I don't think I'll be involved in this one.
Well, you're more worried about your free seats.
Free stuff. Plane rides. I used to get free plane rides. Rusty, okay. Very, very good. Teddy Purcell was the rest of your group. Who else?
Teddy.
Mike Commodore.
Mike Commodore.
Who's the Newf? Is it Commodore?
Teddy.
Oh, Teddy.
Teddy's from Newfoundland.
One of my favorite people, and I know yours too, Darren Langdon.
Yeah, Darren Langdon, yeah, Langer.
So Darren Langdon has got the thick accent, okay? He's from, I think he owns a bar down in Newfoundland.
Langer's.
And he was the best, you know? I'd be flying around at that fantasy camp, you know, with my head cut off with a microphone and sticking in everyone's face, and they'd all, you know, do a reaction. I'd go to Langer, and I'd go, hey, Darren, can we get a word? And he'd go, fuck off. You douchebag. He was I loved him. Yeah. I love the news.
Yeah, his bar is called the Langers. Deer Lake.
Oh, there you go.
Deer Lake. I just pulled up his text because he has listened to the show.
Yeah, right on, man.
Hopefully they're listening to it at Langers.
Yeah. anyway.
But Teddy was great. We played At the end of the day, they left around 7 o'clock from my house.
7 at night or 7 in the morning?
7 at night.
Oh, okay. By the way, folks, that's not such a dumb question to ask Russ. Okay.
It's not 10:30 in the morning. I got here at 10:30 in the morning. Come on.
That was good.
I think it was 7. It might have been a little bit later. Anyways, we started playing odd or even. So last number on every bill is odd or even. So we started playing that game. And it worked out really well for Russ because Teddy kept going Newfie odd, and I had a lot of even numbers in my pocket. So I got the old reversed robbed. I woke up the next day with a big wad in my pocket.
Oh, nice. So, playing for hundreds. Hey, you got to play for hundreds. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's where we start.
Newfie odd, he went.
That a boy.
That's what he kept saying.
That's so funny. That's so funny.
But great, great, great guys. I just loved it. I loved every minute of it, hanging out with the boys.
Is the traffic in LA as bad as everyone says, Russ? Is it murderous?
It sucks. It sucks.
Because you got to go to Beverly Hills, eh?
Yeah, I've got to go to Beverly Hills. I'm meeting my boss, our CEO, today at 4 o'clock.
At the hotel, Beverly Hills?
No, at one of the offices, and then that will.
Are you in
trouble? It'll be a nice ride coming home. No, we're just going to talk about the summer because I'm going up to Victoria for the summer. So,
oh, you're not going to Gosser for the summer?
No, I'm going to Victoria. Our company bought an island up there, and we're going to be developing it. So I'm up there to work.
I'm coming out there to see you when you get there.
Yep. Oh my God, come play the course, James. Yep.
I got a brother there too. The guy punched me in the head 6 years ago. Oh. I got to go straighten that out with him.
Jeez.
Okay, Rusty, let's get out of here. You get to your meeting. Go make some cash. Okay, go
All
make
right.
some cash.
I'll try.
And we'll talk next week. Second round of the playoffs is underway. Thanks a lot, everyone, for joining us. You've been listening to The Suspendables with me, Jungle Jim Jerome, and the one and only Russ Court. Take it easy, Russ. Have a good week.
Over and out. See you.
The Suspendables is a weekly podcast series featuring former NHLer Russ Courtnell and host Jim Jerome. Join us for new episodes available each Wednesday morning. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. We invite you to subscribe and review or share the show with your friends and followers. Check out our website today, thesuspendables.com.